She'll
going to
go right to him.
We'll find out more today after he gets treatment, but we're optimistic.
Mike, now that we know that there will be a game four, do you have any update on who would potentially start that game? And is it contingent on what happens in game three?
Not necessarily contingent upon game three. We do have an idea. We're going to finalize today and maybe announce something either today or tomorrow.
Is Dylan Cease an option for that on short rest?
All options are on the table at this point.
Mike, now that you've had some time to kind of reflect on the first two games of the series, you were at the Cardinals, obviously, around one of the most kind of classic rivalries in the game.
Right.
How, at this point in time, do the Dodgers and Padres kind of compare?
It's very, first of all, the geography creates a, natural rivalry, enthusiasm amongst two fan bases. So that's very unique and exciting and fun to be a part of and experience. As far as reflection on the first two games, hard-fought games. I was really pleased with how our guys responded yesterday, not only coming back from being down a game, but also the circumstances during the game. It was it allowed us to, we're a very close team, but it created a deeper bond with our club.
Mike, speaking about that moment, just Manny Machado, the leadership that he showed in the seventh inning, and just what kind of leadership have you seen from him in this season that you've been with the Padres?
Yeah, leadership can be in a couple of different ways. Manny's done a tremendous job. I'm really proud of him. I'm really grateful for him. He's really taken some of the next steps and been a leader. But the two forms are by your actions, which Manny's done exceptionally well, how he goes about it, how he takes care of himself, how he takes care of his teammates, how he plays the game. So that, his actions speak louder than words. And last night, though, he demonstrated did a really nice job of being able in a very different environment, you could say hostile, a lot of emotions going on, just making sure that everybody was staying present and focused appropriately and, use his words, and his words were very well delivered. So I thought it was an excellent job of Manny showing that he's a leader of this club.
Come down here on the left side, second row to Bob.
Hey, Mike, after that win last night, the emotional win, what was it like just coming back here on the bus or cars, however you guys got here? What was that feeling like?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Sense of satisfaction, like I said, there's wins and there's wins. That was a nice win to be able to come back. We come to our park, with a split. Feel good about that. Broke the home field advantage. Sense of satisfaction with the way we competed, the way we stayed together, the way we played baseball and executed. So there was a sense of accomplishment there. And then it was a little bit of decompression to get ready to do it again.
Yep. Front row here on the left.
Mike, your thoughts on the offensive performance of Fernando Tatis, what he's doing, 9-14, no strikeouts over the postseason, and what his personality brings?
His personality, I love it. I love our personality of our club. I love the fact that they're unique and they're themselves. All our guys are free to be them, and but they do it in a team setting with their teammates, at the forefront of it. Toddy's got just a beautiful personality. He's a showman that has amazing ability, but respects the game highly. As far as what he's doing, he's letting his ability take place. He's doing a lot of good hunting. And what I mean by that is, he's getting balls he can put swings on and just not trying to do too much with it. He's taking his walks, but everything he's doing is in the zone. And he's just looking to put good swings on the baseball, and he's playing good on every facet. He made a great play yesterday on the ball in the gap. Bit of force already on the bases and clearly taking great at bats.
Back row on the left.
Hey, Mike, you obviously know the character of your group, haven't been around them. The way they responded to everything last night, what does that say to everybody else just about the makeup of your group?
It just reinforces what I've known, we've known as a group. All we can control is our own way we deal with business, but this is a group that's going to show up and is going to compete regardless of circumstances. That's one of the reasons we got here. You know, day game, night game, cold, hot, you know, win, lose, we win, we want more, we don't win, we expect to win the next day. It's just about staying in the moment and getting after it.
To Jesse on the left side.
Mike, I know it probably feels like a while ago, but Michael King in that first game against Atlanta, obviously really great. What stood out to you about not only the way he threw the ball, but just sort of his presence that night?
Yeah, great presence. Michael has great presence. You know, he's demonstrated that. We knew that coming in from the intel we got from New York. It's part of the reason I'm comfortable that AJ wanted to acquire him. His makeup and his competitive spirit is something that was coveted. His stuff is outstanding as well, but I've just appreciated how he's carried himself, how he's competed. He's a nice, quiet competitor, but he's got some real fire to him, but showed up and was able to harness all those emotions and go out and execute. And once you do that, your stuff is allowed to play, and his stuff is really, really good. I mean, the ball moves tremendously. The two-seamers just, I mean, you look at it, it's like, wow, that's really nasty. And then he's got the sweeper, which has got, you know, big-time action to it. And then the changeup is nasty, so he can equalize, you know, righties and lefties. He's just got the complete package.
Yep. We'll go to the far left.
Skip, following up on Toddy, he has such a great innate ability to barrel baseballs. You're right, when he just stays within himself, the ball tends to fly a long way. When he gets in trouble, his swings gets a little long. Are you guys reinforcing to him during the hot streak, just keep doing what you're doing, you don't have to hit it another 50 feet?
I don't think we need to reinforce it with him. I mean, Toddy's a, you know, veteran guy now in this league and has had some experiences. And, yeah, I know Vic maybe gives him a cue or two, or maybe even his dad to remind him. But, you know, Clyde Cannell, he's really self-aware of what he's doing and how he's when he's at his best. I think we all maybe need an occasional reminder, but it's not anything in the forefront. We trust Toddy completely.
Anything else for Mike? We've got Sam up on the riser in the back.
Mike Higgy's obviously had a big impact offensively, 3 home runs in 4 postseason games. Could you elaborate on what Higgy brings on the other side of the game, behind the plate, working with his pitching staff, and what he's done in that sense all year?
Yeah, he's been fantastic. He's done a job of being an extension of myself. You know, it's a big part. I always feel like there's a connection with the catcher-manager relationship is important. There's also a really healthy relationship and a connection with Ruben. You know, they talk a lot and, you know, talk through game planning. Peter Somerville, too, does some of our game planning. But, you know, Ruben and Higgy are in lockstep, do a lot of really good communication back and forth. And it's two-way. It's not, you know, top-down. It's same with me. We listen and we express and change or share ideas and thoughts. And then finally, the most important thing is his relationship with the pitchers. You know, that's the most important relationship, is making sure he's synced up with them. They all feel comfortable with him. And he's working with them on how they want to use their stuff and how they're going to attack guys. And he's just got a great demeanor about him as well. He's been a tremendous asset in the clubhouse, a great guy. He got a good energy. He's got a good, great personality, but really smart and done a really good job of shepherding our staff.
Any last ones? All right, thanks, Mike. All right. See you tomorrow.
Enjoy your day.
Manager Mike Shildt on the mic.
I'm upset.
Taking questions. Well, what are you upset for?
Sammy was on a riser in the back. Sam Levitt, everybody, come on.
He was in the back.
Did
he
you
was,
notice it took like at least 15 seconds to get in the microphone?
It's a nice little walk to
Sammy
get back
was
there.
Barely in the building. Come on. We got to get him a front row seat reserved. Sam Levitt we're talking about here.
Sounds like Xander just had a cramp, which is great news.
That would be great news.
A little dehydrated. He'll hydrate here today, get himself. I wouldn't be surprised they got IVs for my man. Like, this is that time of year. You get hydrated. We're going to make sure are excellently hydrated.
I'm not giving you an IV. The guy hit a home run with one leg.
Yeah, I don't know if he can play any defense on that one leg.
That could have been a problem, yes. I mean, I was just saying earlier, I mean, I can hit the ball to the warning track with, I used all my might. He's swinging with one leg, Michael, hitting it out of the ballpark. Man.
Michael King going tomorrow for the Padres. I think the other interesting bit of news is that game 4, depending, he says, not necessarily dependent on what happens in game 3, but Dylan Cease, everyone's on the table for a game 4. Whether I took that as whether they win, everyone's on the table.
I think it'll be Martin Perez. But
either way?
Yeah, I do, because I think if you use Dylan Cease in game four, then you got to bring Darvish back on shorter rest for game five. So you're going to pitch two guys on shorter rest.
I think it could be Martin Perez or some type of bullpen day in game four, if depending on whether they win or lose.
Yeah, you could do Martin Perez and, bullpen. You could just pitch Yu Darvish in game five anyway, and you cease to back up Martin Perez in game four. There's a lot of different things you can do. He's going to keep the door open, which I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of different patchwork ideas.
Like if you announce one thing and then you change it, everybody'd give you a hard time.
100%.
So you have to just keep the door open. That's how this thing works here. We're using Martin Perez. Wait a minute. I just changed my mind. You can't change your mind. Yes, I can.
You said you were going to use Martin Perez.
You've got to use Martin Perez.
What is happening over here? Sounds like I'm having a conversation on the Scraby Show
with myself. Has Mike Schilt turned into... I don't know. I sensed... just a little bit of hesitation in the voice of some of those questions.
What do you mean?
What I mean is Mike Schilt intimidating some of these reporters a little bit?
Hey,
I'm not kidding you. He sounds just like, I don't want to say the wrong thing here to you, Mike. So I got to be careful with this question.
I think he challenged. I don't even think he challenges you. I just think
he demands a good question.
That's a good question.
He does.
I can't remember who it was yesterday. Someone asked him about the last six innings of the game not going their way. And after game one. And I just knew. I was like, it's not going to be a good one, because
it's not going to sit well with them.
They didn't not play well. They just didn't get the one hit they needed to change the outcome. He's like, obviously we didn't win, but I think it just requires a strong question. I think that's really what it boils down to.
I like guys that challenge you to ask a good question when I have a good question.
No, right?
But I'm not a big fan when I have to ask something and I'm not really ready.
Because that's the thing. You don't have to ask a question when you're in
that. That's right.
There is a feeling when you're in that room that you should be asking.
Yes, I showed up. I got to do something.
I feel it myself. You got to resist the urge to get on there and just ask a stupid question.
Ask a dumb one. Don't ask a dumb one.
All right, let's get to break. Wait. Well, we're not going to go to break. We're going to stay because Michael King is now on the mic.
Mike, you're fresh off New York, Boston. How did last night compare to the rivalry that you left behind?
Similar. Especially in a playoff atmosphere, it definitely makes it a little bit more intense, but yeah, that's what we expect in terms of the atmosphere and also performance.
You've spoken about an evolution of appreciation of Fernando Tatis Jr. from afar, the way you thought about him when you weren't his teammate. What did you see from him last night? And it seems like he kind of relishes playing the villain in that atmosphere.
Definitely hated pitching against him. He's just such a talent that you never want him up in big spots when you're the opposing team. But as a player, I mean, the guy does not shy away from the moment. And one thing that I admire about him is when he does succeed, which is often, he's celebrating with his teammates. It's never to show up another team or another player. It's like he's just having fun with his teammates, and that's something that I didn't realize when I was playing against him, but as a teammate, he's absolutely incredible.
What could you learn from watching Yu Darvish pitch to that lineup yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, that's why Darvish has had such a decorated career. There are his demeanor in big games and big spots is something that I'll always admire. I try to be as stoic as possible, but sometimes the emotions get to me. Doesn't seem like it affects Darvish. And even knowing going into that game, if we lose that game, we're down 2-0, it's a big uphill battle for us. So having the composure that he did and how dominant he was, it's always impressive to watch him work.
You're in the third row on the offside.
Kind of circling back to the rivalry between the two teams, how much of that, how aware were you of that when you got traded over last offseason? And, what have you learned and kind of discovered about it since then.
Yeah, I felt like I saw it a lot in the 22 playoffs. I think that that was what was in my head coming over here. And then it's honestly, yeah, just how the fans treat each other. You know that there's going to be fights in the crowd. You know that they're not going to be saying nice things when we're in L.A. And when you go to a team that doesn't care, you don't see that. Similar in Boston when I was a Yankee, it's fans are going to get on you. And it's one of my favorite things about the game, because I think hearing a pin drop in an opposing stadium is the joy of this game. So feeling that yesterday in the eighth and ninth inning was really fun.
Do you in particular kind of feed off that extra energy when you're out there?
Of course, yeah. I think it's something that as a player you gotta feed off of. You gotta add it to your game and make the pressure become an added privilege. And you know that you're out there playing a kid's game, but when you got thousands of fans rooting against you and cussing at you, it's a lot more fun.
Go to the back row on the left side.
Hey, Michael, what does the response that you guys had as a team last night kind of say about the makeup of this club?
Yeah, big credit to Manny. Manny had us all come together. I also think that the performance is still what matters more than the team just coming together and saying we're going to stick together. And seeing that those last couple innings, how we responded was a huge positive. I also think it starts with Darvish. Darvish had however long of a break while he's standing out there on the mound in his seventh inning, and he goes out there and puts up a zero. And at that point, I think it was still 4-1. So it's a big situation for us to calm down the noise. And he put up the zero, kept the momentum on our side, and we went out there and put up however many runs.
You kind of touched on it. You're obviously coming off a high-intensity start, maybe even more juice going into this one. What do you do with that, knowing that it's going to be maybe even more of an edge on the other side and the environment and all that?
Yeah, I think I know I joked in my first one that my pitch count would have to be up a little bit. I think with the opposing team coming in, it'll be a little bit louder. I know that these fans show out, and they're definitely going to make it an uncomfortable environment for the Dodgers.
And then what do you do with the success of your last start? Is it a confidence booster, or are you the type of guy that just flush it and kind of on to the next one?
I'll definitely take a little bit of confidence from it, but definitely needs to be flushed because it's a totally different team. You know, I got a totally different approach. I can't use the same sequences, can't use the same pitches to a lot of these hitters. And then it's just continuing to be able to read swings and trust Higgy. Yeah.
Sam on the riser in the back.
Michael, you Darvish did a nice job against Ohtani last night, held him hitless, and he goes 0-4. How do you view that matchup at the top of the lineup in particular and really within the context of their lineup 1-9?
Yeah, all credit to Darvish. That obviously he's what makes them go. If you can control him, and I also think if you can keep runners off base when he's at the plate is a huge thing. So he did a phenomenal job. You know he's Shohei Ohtani, so you know he has the ability to get you even if you execute pitches. And it's really just limiting the damage when he's up there. So I'll definitely be asking Darvish what he was seeing and what his approach was.
Put Barry, second row on the right.
Hey, Mike. So last night was kind of like I've seen it at a regular Wednesday night at Yankee Stadium. How would you compare the two?
I would disagree. I mean, yeah, the Yankee fans are nuts as well. Very fun to play in front of. Very fun to play against. And you fully expect that. You know, it's a rivalry. It's a heated baseball game, and we were winning, so it's you get those frustrated fans. So like I said before, it's very fun to see the disappointment on opposing fans' faces, and I hope to continue to do that for the rest of the October.
Michael King's press conference at Petco Park ahead of his start tomorrow night.
There was a lot of narrative surrounding just walking Ohtani at that point, but what does it say about the starting pitchers to go after a guy like that and to take pride and to obviously have success in game two?
Yeah, I think it's a confidence booster for not only the pitcher, but also the team. I think that all of our, when executed, plays against any hitter. Obviously, Ohtani's probably the best in the game. But it's that competing factor. And they still have Mookie and Freddie and Teoscar behind them. So, yes, you don't want Ohtani to be the guy that beats you, but you also have to be able to execute because you don't want to have to face those three guys with him on base, especially with the speed that he has. So it's a game that needs to be played, but I also think it's a confidence booster to be able to get a guy like that out.
Anything else for Michael? All right, Michael, thanks for coming. We'll see you tomorrow.
Game three starter, Michael King, talking to the media. Let's get to break. We've been here listening to the Padres post-game, workout? Jesus, Tony, what is going on?
It's the Eco Water SoCal Padres pregame workout show.
There you go. Thank you, Scrape.
Chris is looking around like, what the heck is going on? Michael King.
I was flustered because I saw a video of one of the Dodger fans throwing a beer can towards Toddy, and he is so upset.
Toddy is,
and,
of course.
No, not Toddy.
The fan.
And it, you know, Michael King just finished talking about how the frustration built up, and I happened to be scrolling, and I ran into this video of this man chugging a beer can, and then a couple pumps towards Toddy. He was quite upset. It was quite funny. All right, let's get to break. More discussion on the other side. Here's some traffic.
All right, back-to-back press conferences there for you. Mike Schilt and then Michael King, both coming to you from Petco Park. Thanks to Dave Marcus helping to set that up. And
shout out to Dave.
My boy Dave.
Hey, Dave, thank you.
Shout out to Sammy Levitt from getting his questions in from the upper riser in the deep right field corner of that press conference.
He's using your old form of communication, the pigeon.
Carrier pigeon, Tony. Carrier pigeon. Yes, we have a question coming in from a carrier pigeon.
It's from, we all know it's from Chris, okay?
It's from old Haas Ello. He's got a couple of questions.
That was funny. I mean, I hope whoever was carrying the microphone had their step tracker on because they got good
Sam
about it.
Sam seemed like he was far away.
At least the first two games we had at home, they have one person on the left, one person on the right with a mic. They kind of put your hand up. He didn't have to walk too far, but no. He was up on the, what do you call it, the riser?
The upper riser in the back.
I expect Sammy to get better treatment than that.
Maybe he wanted to be
well,
in the upper riser.
Sammy, you know, wait, there's a reason why Sammy's
I know why. On the right.
Because he's also a filmer.
Yes.
So he's got to set his stand up.
Okay.
He got to set it, and then, by the way, it was a funny moment the last time. You know, a lot of times a press conference starts, if you happen to roll in late, you kind of have to roll behind the cameras.
Mm.
My man Barry Bloom, no, he's the exception to the rule. First, second game of the wild card series press conference, about 10 minutes deep, he just rolled right across the front.
Barry is my guy.
I sat next to Barry at each of the Braves games, and
couldn't wait to get away.
He was very excited that I was sitting next to him. I tried to stay away from him, but he kept like kind of kicking me with his foot a little bit.
Barry's a salty veteran that has been in this game since I was a baby.
He kept doing this thing where he turned to me and just looked at me, and I'm like,
Barry,
you're too close, dude.
Barry kind of feels like since he's been in this game as long as he has, you just kind of have to deal with him.
Yeah, you do.
That's kind of the way Barry's going to be.
I've known Barry for a long
time. Me too.
He loves himself some baseball for sure.
Terrific guy, though. In the long run, Bear, we love you, and we'll see you out at the ballpark, everybody, tomorrow night. We're going to be broadcasting, don't forget, tomorrow live from Baja Rick's Cantina. Live broadcast actually gets underway all day long on 97.3 The Fan, so you know, get down there for breakfast. Ben and Woods will be kicking things off 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Annie and Elston from 10 to 2 tomorrow. And then, of course, pregame, it's us, Gwen and Chris, from 2 to 5. Baja Rick's located at 176th Avenue. It's across from the Hard Rock. It's presented by Santos Super Premium. That's additive-free tequila, people. Santo, work hard, play loud. We'll be having some fun tomorrow before Game 3 of the series between the Dodgers and the Padres, which, as you know, is now tied at 1. More Gwen and Chris coming up.
3:35 on the clock. Tony Glenn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. Just finished the Padres presser. Heard from manager Mike Schilt. Heard from Game 3 starter Michael King. Heard some pigeon carrier questions. We heard a little bit of everything in that that last segment.
I had a friend that texted me and said, "Man, cold blooded shot by Tony."
What do you want from me? I mean, you're going to be old someday.
I am.
I will be. I will be.
But you better hope both.
Yeah, you're right. Let me rewind that. God willing, I'll be older one of these days.
There you go.
Let's do know what we haven't talked about. I mean, we've been locked in on the Padres Dodgers series, which has been fantastic through the first two, but that Mets and Phillies series ain't far behind.
Wow, that game yesterday.
I mean,
doesn't take a backseat to too many games.
The first game was electric, and then watching the Phillies and Mets go literally back and forth. Vientos hits two homers that tie it twice, once in the ninth.
Yeah.
On a fastball that looked like it was like up near his chest, hits it out, and then Philly walks it off. Nick Castellanos, who is seemingly every postseason right in the thick of things along with Bryce Harper.
Well, you know, first of all, the Phillies had their backs against the wall, right, because they lost game one, and then they're down 3-0, and what was it? Severino was rolling along.
Yeah, he was.
Bottom of the sixth or seventh inning, he had first two outs and then gave up a hit to Trey Turner. And then here came Bryce Harper. And didn't you just know
he was
going to hit a home run in that at bat? I mean, Bryce Harper has that ability in the postseason to rise to the occasion. We know it all too well. And so he hits the two-run homer and then Castellanos homers to follow. So now it's 3-3. And the Mets have been taking punches like that for weeks now.
Yes, they have, man.
And every time they take one, they punch back, and Brandon Nimmo hits a home run, and they take the lead back. And I'm thinking, man, this Met team just will not go away. Then Stott got a two-run triple, and the Phillies looked like they had it wrapped up until Vientos hit another homer. I mean, it was, the mood swings in that, spectacular. And, yeah, I don't know where that series is going to go. I think the Mets do have a bit of a magic about them, but Phillies are the Phillies, too, so they'll go to New York, and they might have to give some of the Mets players directions to the ballpark because they have not been in New York for 2 weeks, the Mets.
Straby, give us that schedule run that they've been on.
Oh, it's pretty brutal. They were in...
To finish the regular season.
They went four in Milwaukee.
They went three in Atlanta on the 24th, 25th, 26th. Three in Milwaukee, so that's six in a row. Then they had to go back to Atlanta for that doubleheader. That would be a home run. Home run. Off of Class A.
Three-run shot for Detroit. Kerry Carpenter.
Do you remember that name?
Did he former Padre?
No. The Grand Slam?
No, that was Parker Meadows.
That was Meadows. I was about to say.
I remember Parker Meadows. But a huge three-run homer there. Two outs in the top of the ninth gives Detroit a 3-0 lead over Cleveland.
Let me say, this is why nothing is guaranteed. Class A, he's probably been the closest thing to untouchable in baseball.
Right.
Really the whole season.
Yeah.
He just got a three-run tank job off of him.
So Detroit,
it was a bomb, too.
Detroit now is three outs away from evening that series. All right, back to the Mets travels.
So basically since September 24th until yesterday, the Mets had been on the road.
They went to Atlanta, Milwaukee, Philadelphia.
Philly. Now they're back home for the first time in like 2 weeks, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, they've been playing great ball, and they've been coming up with, you know, eighth inning rallies, ninth inning rallies, time and time again.
Was Pete Alonso, did he have one out in the top of the ninth with that?
Home run in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yeah, one out in the top of the ninth. It's a three-run homer to win that series. Lindor did it to get them into the playoffs on that Monday doublehead. They were losing, and he hits a two-run homer in the ninth. Then Vientos did it yesterday, and I thought, Mets are...
I've got goosebumps, man. I love this type of baseball.
It's been awesome.
I don't know who number 34 in the Tigers is, but he looks like a Detroit Tiger. He's got like
that's
a mustache.
Jake Rogers, the catcher for
the mustache.
Oh, he looks like a Detroit Tiger through and through.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, let's. Well, first of all, I gotta bring this up. Sorry, man, I can't let you just slide. Chris and I were arguing for GBU. We were told the math wasn't right. We wouldn't have enough time. And then my man Scraby, to his credit, started doing the math when we came on and realized we weren't gonna be able to stretch that Mets Phillies for another 25 minutes. So we'll do a little GBU after some traffic.
How did you navigate your Sunday yesterday? Gwen and Chris continuing here.
I thought you were asking me.
No, I was asking everybody out there. I was kind of asking everybody out there because, I mean, look, we all had our fantasy football games. It was a week, you know, big day in the National Football League, but got Padres, Dodgers. So I had the DVR on overdrive yesterday, guys. I had tape and everything all over the place.
It's a beautiful thing when, you know, your postseason game starts late in
that
the
helped.
Evening.
Yeah, that
you
helped
can,
a little bit.
You can
yeah.
get most of your football out your system.
Yeah. It was a hell of a day in the National Football League. So let's take a look back at the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll start it with the Atlanta Falcons. Thursday night football, Kirk Cousins, 509 yards passing. That's the 15th most all-time. Falcons pulled out a thrilling 36-30 win over the Bucks. All of a sudden, we mentioned the other day, Tony, the NFC South doesn't look bad. Tonight, the Saints will play in Kansas City, and who knows? The NFC South was kind of the doormat for a while. It's in Kansas City,
oh, wow.
But
I thought it was the, other
the
way
Chiefs
around.
Are very much shorthanded in this game. Great game yesterday in Cincinnati. Baltimore and the Bengals. Your guy, Ja'Marr Chase, went crazy.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
10 for 193, two touchdowns.
That was a real reaction just there.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate fantasy.
I know. Right now it's tough. Five touchdown passes for Joe Burrow. But Lamar Jackson and the Ravens overcame it all to win.
Takes the snap. Quick toss. Henry right side. Loses his footing. Bounces back up. Churns his way forward. And he's in for the touchdown. Derrick Henry with his 100th career touchdown. And the Ravens cap their opening drive with six.
Ravens got a little lucky at the end. The Bengals picked up a fumble in overtime. And I thought they boxed it up. I mean, they were at the 35-yard line. And they ran three plays. Straight plunges into the line and set up a 53-yard field goal. That's not a guarantee.
No, I felt like Joe Burrow also threw for like 500 yards.
Yeah,
so why
let
not
him
try
throw
to
one
throw
more.
It a little
throw
bit.
One more, move closer. Anyway, they missed the field goal, and then the next play, Derrick Henry rumbles like 60 yards.
Yeah.
I don't know how this guy has it in him, you know, in the fifth quarter to still be running
yeah,
that hard
I can tell you as he has
and running away from
training?
People.
No, because no one else has it in them at that point
good
to
point.
Keep tackling.
Good
it's like,
point.
Ah,
yeah.
You start that mental game of having to tackle that big dude for four quarters and an extra one.
Yeah, yeah. No
I'm
thanks.
Good.
No thanks.
Ravens 41, the Bengals 38. One more great game in Jacksonville yesterday. Trevor Lawrence celebrating his 25th birthday. 371 yards through the air, a couple of touchdowns. The Jags blew a big fourth quarter lead, though, to Joe Flacco.
Flacco.
Best play of the day. I don't know if you saw it. Joe Flacco, 29-yard scramble.
And he looked as slow as it sounds.
Slow as it sounds, but
it
he
like
got
it hurt.
There.
It looked like it hurt.
They couldn't get him. Colts tied it up before the Jags pulled it out on a last-second kick. 37-34. Into the bad we go. And I got to believe that Sean McDermott did not want to wake up and look at the newspapers in Buffalo today. Because he mismanaged the end of that game. Buffalo had the ball 20-20. With like 20 seconds to go on their own 1 yard line, and they threw three passes out of the end zone.
I'm not sure what that was about.
I don't know what they were thinking.
If he didn't want to have to read about a paper, no worries. It's all over TV.
It's everywhere. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
He can't know that in the local coffee shop.
Yeah, he can't ignore it. And so they had to punt out of their end zone. The Texans got the punt and were already, you know, in Buffalo territory. One play, kicked a field goal. Texans pull it out. 23-20.
C.J. Stroud, all sorts of time. Loads up, middle of the field, deep shot. Wide open, caught. Nico Collins streaks into the end zone. He blew by the coverage. 67-yard strike. C.J. Stroud to Nico Collins. And Stroud stands there posing with his arms crossed.
Raise your hand if you played against Nico Collins yesterday.
Hey, at least he left the game.
Yeah, not till he did that.
I felt like I played against Nico Collins. I felt like everybody had Nico Collins up and down their whole starting
Can I say this
days.
About the Texans uniforms? I'm all for a new design, That was straight out of create a team in Madden.
Let me tell you, you guys know how I usually like these alternate uniforms.
Not a fan?
I wasn't a fan.
The H made it look fake. It looked like either Any Given Sunday or Madden.
It looked like some created jerseys out of Madden, yeah, for sure.
It was pretty bad.
23-20, the Texans are 4-1.
Oh, they still won? It's not about the jerseys, Chris?
Not this time.
Okay.
Also in the bad category, your Niners. Vaunted San Francisco 49ers. They are injured. There's no question. They have excuses.
No excuses.
But blowing
blowing a
23-10 lead in the fourth quarter was a little surprising.
Where have we seen that before?
Also letting Kyler Murray run wild for the Cardinals.
Snap to Murray, and he's going to keep it running to the right. He's got room at the 45-40. He points to the sky as he takes off at the 30, at the 20, the 10, the 5, touchdown. A design run for Kyler Murray.
I've never seen a guy point to the sky at the 45-yard line
with
before.
With a guy 2 yards behind him.
Wow. That's the equivalent of Dion in that Atlanta pick with the 49ers. High-stepping from, like, the 50 all the way in.
I mean, nobody laid a hand on Murray. The 49ers, I think, really still could have won this game, but their kicker got hurt trying to make a tackle.
And that's why kickers don't make tackles.
So they didn't have anybody to kick the game-winning field goal.
He got trucked. He looked his ankle got stuck underneath him. And it was his kicking. And he did. Like, he got down like he was about to try to deliver the hit.
Yeah.
And it got the hit delivered, and his ankle was at the bottom.
Why is he taking that? Like, do you not work on tackling at all, kicker?
I doubt it.
That was
one.
Probably
Tell you
the
what,
worst form.
He's a pretty flexible dude, though. I mean, he got low.
He did get low.
He was so low. He was the low man.
He broke his ankle. I don't know what actually happened, but that was...
He's going to be okay, it looks like. But he wasn't okay yesterday. I do think for sure he definitely hurt his kicking muscle, though, Scrabby.
His flexor digitorum.
24-23, Arizona with the upset.
I got called out on the chat saying they're not a fan of me anymore because I jumped off the 49ers bandwagon.
He's not.
You obviously don't know much about me.
Yeah, no, he's not.
I could never.
Off.
But this team right now is bad. I saw them lose a 13-point lead to the, or 14-point lead to the Rams a couple weeks ago. Now the Cardinals come back in the fourth quarter and win. Now the media in San Francisco is calling for Kyle Shanahan's job, which is crazy. They say that he has a finishing problem.
I'm done. I'm done with you.
Which
people.
He may, because he can't finish Super Bowls.
And I can't stand. And I can't stand Kyle Shanahan. But to sit here and try to act like this dude is not a good coach and that you should fire him is asinine.
This particular radio personality, I believe, is a hot take artist.
Oh,
so.
Okay. That sounds
good. There we
good.
Go.
All right. Also in the bad category, Tony, your Raiders. They led 10-0, and they were on their way for another score when Gardner Minshew was picked. 100-yard pick six the other way. Denver gets 34 straight points. How could Denver get 34 points at all? Raiders get blown out in the Mile High City. 34-18. Here is that pick.
Minshew with a play fake, rolling to his left. Now floats one too high. It's going to be intercepted at the goal line. Down the west sideline, intercepted. This is past Surtain. Surtain's going to house call it. 25-20, 15-10, 5, touchdown. And the Broncos, on a 100-yard interception return for a touchdown, are 1 point away from tying this game.
First announcer ever to use a geographical designation. He was going down the west sideline. Never heard that one before.
Well, yeah, it's west, right. Mr. Radio Guy, because I'm going west now.
For those of us who don't live in Denver, we had no idea where Patrick Surtain was. But.
That's a great question. I'll tell you what. The only thing bad about what happened in this is that Denver was on the positive side of it. I'm sorry.
You can't do it.
I want Sean Payton to keep losing.
They're 3-2.
They are.
Surprisingly.
They are.
And those uniforms, those need to stay.
And Bo Nix is playing all right.
Those were beautiful uniforms yesterday.
They need to come back with those because
beautiful
I do not like
the beautiful uniforms
ones.
Yesterday. All right, in the ugly category, the Dolphins, they won, but man, were they ugly to watch.
There's no highlights for this game on our
highlights. Well, there shouldn't have been. I saw their center snap the ball over the quarterback's head twice in the shotgun.
Oh.
I saw their center snap one along the ground to where the holder couldn't set it up for the kicker.
I saw that one.
I saw a punt get blocked by the back of somebody. The Miami Dolphins have turned into a circus all of a sudden. But New England's no better, so Dolphins pulled it out 15-10. Also in the ugly cat, well, I got Denver and the Raiders in here again. I must have really
forgot to tell you that
a lot of that game. Well, things happen. We'll move on to Washington and Cleveland then, because the Browns season has gotten very ugly all of a sudden. I don't know how much longer Deshaun Watson can keep playing, guys. 125 yards, average 4.3 yards per attempt. That's like minor league numbers. He was finally replaced by Jameis Winston as the Commanders rolled to the victory.
Jaden loads one off towards the army. Brown, he's got him! Touchdown! Touchdown, Washington! Daniels to Brown on a bomb!
Washington's looking pretty good, huh? Four straight wins.
Jalen Daniels is turning out to be the steal of the draft
so
right
far.
Now.
I wonder when they're going to just play him to run and make him beat them with the pass. But
he's throwing some nice bombs over some guys' heads.
No, that was a good throw there. He threw another one that McLaurin couldn't haul in. Would have been another touchdown. You know, you're right, Tony. Jaden Daniels looks unbelievably good right now. Maybe the Heisman voters knew what they were doing there. Washington 34. The 1-4 Browns 13. All right, there's a baseball edition of the good, bad, and ugly.
Now, did you? We have a few seconds. So.
Do you know what I didn't hear on there?
What?
Because both of you guys have been on his heads pretty good.
What?
Missed the Bears.
Oh, Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams.
Yeah,
back-to-back
I should have snuck him
games.
In there.
I'm so impressed by a win.
Game, Scraby.
I'm so impressed with a win over the Panthers.
Hey, it was a win over the Panthers. They won last week.
I'm just mad because.
What's the record?
I don't know, honestly.
3-2.
Bears, 3-2.
3-2?
Yeah, the Panthers are bad. I'm not sold on Caleb Williams after a great game against the Panthers, but I will give you the fact that he had a great game. So
he's had back-to-back great games.
That's a step in the right direction.
He's quarterbacking a team to a 3-2 record, same as Jalen Daniels.
I think his defense has more to do with that than anything.
I have to say that Caleb Williams, now that he's, you know what's helped him? Is that they kind of forgot about him after the first couple of weeks. He didn't start well, and people have got the spotlight off of him, and I think that's helped him.
Daniels taking the spotlight. But the questions are still out there of did the Bears take the wrong guy? Because Jaden Daniels looks amazing.
I don't think they took the wrong guy.
They definitely
He'll be all right. But Jaden Daniels is going to be the rookie of the year through 5 weeks.
I don't know why Tony's peacocking me over there.
What are you
talking about?
I'm not even looking at you. Like, you saw that?
Yes. He's like, what do you have to say about that, Mr. Screamy?
Well, I've been saying the same thing Scraby's been saying.
Well, then you get some too, then.
I get a little some of that too. Yeah, Tigers do finish off a 3-0 win over the Guardians.
1-1.
Excuse me. Kerry Carpenter's 3-run homer in the 9th inning wins it for Detroit. So the 3 series are all 1-1. And the other one is the Yankees and Royals, which is a little later today. All right, we up against the
I was going to play this, but we got distracted for a second. It was Dan Orlovsky. He said today on ESPN that the Browns maybe have the worst contract in all of American sports
right now.
We already
knew that, though. Dan didn't break the news right
now. No. But Dan's never really that critical. I'm not a big Dan Orlovsky fan.
He's not
critical, but he was basically saying the owner is forcing this team to start Deshaun Watson because of their investment.
Hey, you made your bed, now you got to lie in it.
Yeah, if karma isn't paying the Browns back right now, I don't know what karma is, so that's what you get.
Was it me? Did I bring us in?
Yes, I think so.
Let's get some break.
Sure,
4 o'clock hour on the other side. What we got, Chris Grape?
We have
Chris Grape.
We have Sammy Leff caught up with Manny Machado in the clubhouse here just recently.
We'll hear from Manny on the other side. More going to Chris.